Sorry, let's begin. So number one, beginning of Perek Shira. Shamayim Omrim, the heavens say. So remember again, Perek Shira is all about the discussion of nature. It's the natural world speaking. Now, does the natural world... Yes? Perfect. Everyone has a sheet? Good. Okay, so remember again, if I were to ask you, does nature speak, what would you say? Sorry? Yes. Okay, how do you know nature speaks? Don't tell me Perek Shira. Don't tell me Perek Shira. Good. So remember again, this is going to be, there's not a right or a wrong answer to this. Perek Shira on one level could be understood simply as metaphorical. Does nature speak? Nature doesn't speak because speech is a function of humanity. Remember again, when the Pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu breathed life into Vayipach Ba'apov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu breathed life into Adam, how does Unculus translate that phrase, Vayipach Ba'apov Ruach Chaim? Unculus Hager says, Ruach Mimalala. Ruach Mimalala, good. Ruach Mimalala means what? Speech. So according to Unculus, and by the way, it's not just Unculus, many others as well, understand that the life force of man is speech. There are many living organisms in this world. By the way, we often think that what makes man unique?
Thoughts.
Good. What else? Bechira, choice. But all of that is a function of what? Of a neshama. If I were to ask you, do animals have a neshama? What would you say? So this in and of itself is subject to an incredible amount of philosophical debate. So the Ramban, already early, the Baal HaTanya discusses that animals don't necessarily have a neshama, but they have what's called a nefesh. Anything that is alive, anything that is alive, ultimately, again, something has to provide that life force. That's the chilek between inanimate or inanimate objects. Yes? Yeah, that I don't know. When it comes to Gilgulim, it's above my pay grade. I don't. It's a very good question. In general, by the way, the whole concept of Gilgulim is one that's not necessarily agreed upon by everyone. What you come back, how you come back, I don't know. So I'm just pointing out that anything that is alive, by definition, has a life force which propels it. So in man, that life force is called a neshama. Let's say you assume animals have it. Animals have a nefesh. Is the natural world alive? The heavens. Are the heavens alive? Not a trick question. You have some science background, right? Bepashas, the answer is no. That's different, by the way, than, let's say, plants. Is the plant world alive?
Yes.
Absolutely. Right, there are processes that occur within plant life, within vegetation, within trees. Absolutely, there's life. There are things which unfold in the heavens, but the heavens as an entity, we would not normally assume is something that is alive. But yet, as we're going to see throughout Perek Shira, we are ascribing thoughts, emotions, and speech to the various parts of the natural universe. Whether this is to be understood literally, that on some type of spiritual level, the different parts of nature actually speak, that there is some type of message like that, or if it's just to be understood on a metaphorical level, of course there's no speech, but this is David HaMelech, or whoever the author of Perek Shira is, ascribing speech to the various parts of nature. We'll see that unfold as we go through it. So Shamayim Omrim, what do the heavens say? HaShamayim Misabrim Kvot Kel, Umaaseh Yodov Magid Harakia. Literally translated, HaShamayim Misabrim Kvot Kel, the heavens recite the glory of God, Umaaseh Yodov Magid Harakia, and the firmament, Rakia, tells of his handiwork. So again, interestingly enough, as we mentioned in our introduction to Perek Shira, many of the psukim that we're going to find quoted in Perek Shira, remember, let's go back for just one moment. Whenever you find the different parts of nature speaking, they're never coming up with their own phrases. Their speeches, so to speak, are always gleaned from what? From Tanakh, somewhere in Tanakh. most of the time, it's safer Tehillim, which makes a lot of sense, because now again, at least according to one opinion, the author of Perek Shira was David HaMelech. So it makes sense that if David HaMelech is the author, then by definition, when gleaning the various statements of the different parts of nature, it's coming from Sefer Tehillim. But we'll find, it's not just Sefer Tehillim. Sometimes it's Mishlei, other times it's other Sfarim of Tanakh. We'll see it go through. So let's analyze this a little bit. So let's take a step back. What is the goal of Perek Shira? If I were to ask you, it's all very beautiful. So the heavens speak, and what do they say? That the heavens speak, the heavens recite the glory of God. And the sky tells of the work of His hands. But what is going to be the point of Perek Shira?
Maybe we could pull out like a kavachomer, like
this is like what nature is. Excellent. Exactly. It's a kavachomer. Well said. That the whole point that we're going to see over here is the natural world. And this is really quite interesting. If you go outside, I don't know if any of you were outside early in the morning this morning. So I was outside about 5:30 in the morning this morning, and it's now, this time of year, it's pitch black. And it was a beautiful, clear sky. Beautiful, clear sky. And the stars were out, and mamish magnificent. If you ever have a moment like that, and you look up into the sky, and you see millions of stars, how do you feel? Awe. Good. How else do you feel? Humbled. Right? Why humbled? So sometimes when you look at the heavens, you see, we go through life, and the truth is, I think we spoke about this in a past class, human beings, by definition, are egocentric and self-centered. I think we spoke about this in our last class. Right? By definition, that's our default. That's our default. See, sometimes we say that and we say, oh, it's so terrible. It's not true. I'm not egocentric. I'm not self-centered. We are. There are two things that every single person is innately. One of them is egocentric, self-centered. We'll make that as one. What's the other one that we are innately?
Denial
that we're egocentric and self-centered. Good. What else?
Lazy.
Lazy. Very important. By the way, see, we look at laziness as like a bad midah that you like take on. I became lazy. The Ramchal writes about this. Right, Ramchal, Ramosh Chaim Lotato, Misael Shem writes about this right in the beginning of the Sefer, in the Shar HaZrizos, right after the first part is Zehirus, second part is Zrizos. And says Ramchal, why is Zrizos so difficult? Why is Zrizos so difficult? Why? Zrizos requires you to be what?
Active,
not lazy. And by definition, what do I want to do more than anything? Be lazy. And the Ramchal says, lest you think this is because I'm a bad person, I'm not a bad person. But rather, so why do we have an innate predisposition and proclivity towards laziness? Because human beings are made up of?
Ground.
Okay, I want to say a little bit nicer. Right? Ground, right? The earth. Right? Or to say a little bit differently, we are made up of matter. So science 101. Matter only moves when? When there's energy applied to it, right? Matter remains in a state of rest until it is acted upon. We are made of matter. And so therefore, more often than not, we only move when acted upon. If there's not something pushing me, if there's not something propelling me, generally I'm not going to move. That's why the Ramchal stresses the incredible emphasis on Zrizos. Because Zrizos, to a certain degree, requires me to go against my very nature. To be Zoriz means to move myself even before I am acted upon, which goes against the very grain of really human beings. This is just the way we are. We're Minha Adama, as was said, we are from the earth. The earth remains at rest until it's acted upon. We remain at rest. So what's interesting is as follows, that often when we look at nature, we are humbled by nature. We're humbled by nature. Because nature, right? So, I'm sorry, let me go back to get back on that train of thought. So often we become very egocentric, very self-centered. We think that kind of the universe revolves around us. And then what happens? And then you look at nature and you realize how small you are. I am like one little person in this cosmic universe. I'll tell you where I often find this hits most acutely. So by the Pesach Seder, by Shvo Chamascha, we open the door for a variety of different reasons. Some have the minhag to actually walk outside. So remember again, what does the moon look like by Pesach? It's full moon. Right? Remember again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Dafka took us out the middle of the month, because remember again, there are millions of people living in Mitzrayim. They're leaving nighttime. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be the greatest amount of light. So we leave mid-month. Isn't it amazing when you take a moment and you think that the moon that you look at when you step outside of your house during Shavuot HaMasra is the same exact moon that our ancestors benefited from over 3,000 years earlier. It's the same moon. It's the same exact moon. And it's the same moon that Avram Avinu looked at. And it's the same moon that Rivka Avinu looked at. And it's the same moon. It's the same moon. How humbling is that? Right? We, like we say, Adam Kitzel Over, man is often like a passing shadow. If we're lucky, we get 120 years in this world. We come, we go. Maybe we're remembered, maybe we're not. Maybe we're remembered, maybe we're not. But at the end of the day, you look at the moon. It's the same moon. It's been here thousands upon thousands of years. And however long the days of creation were, thousands, at least thousands upon thousands of years, same moon. So you look at nature, and often you become humbled. You look at nature, you say, nature is so great, so awesome, so vast, and I'm so little. And what Perek Shira does is it turns that paradigm on its head. In fact, the entire essence of Perek Shira is we see the greatness of nature, and in everything in which we see the greatness of nature, if nature is great, Kal Vachomer, man is that much greater. That is the entire message. So we see the beauty, the grandeur in every part of nature, and from the greatness of nature, as great as it is, we learn that we are even greater. Yes?
But isn't the story in the introduction about Devon Malach and the frog kind of saying the opposite?
In what sense?
Devon was like, oh, I'm like, I praise Hashem more than anything else. And the frog was like, well, actually, like, every single bit of nature praises Hashem more than you.
Excellent point. Except we're going to see one thing. Everything in nature sings how many songs? Right? Just not all together. Each item in nature sings. Forget about the measures just a moment. Based on Perek Shira.
One.
Right? Everything in nature sings, but it sings one song. We're going to see that the greatness of man is that he has an unlimited, infinite number of songs that he could compose. So David HaMelech's mistake in the Medrash was that he thought he was the only singer, the most prolific singer. The frog told him, hey, by the way, there's a lot of us singing out there. A lot of us singing out there. And the frog might have even sung more songs collectively than David HaMelech, but they're going to see that man's ability to compose his own unique Shira is different than anything else in the world. Nature has a song, but as we're going to see, the heavens' song, that's it. It's one track. It's one track. There's not like 50 songs, right? There's no playlist for the Shamayim, right? There's one song. This is it. Shamayim Misabrim Kevokel Umasiyad Magidrakiyah. Beautiful. Sings it every single moment, but this is it. Man's song is going to be multifaceted. But hold on, we're gonna develop this. So let's add, yes?
Just one thing also for the Kal Homer. Is it only for ourselves or also for Hashem? Like Kal Homer, nature's so great.
Absolutely. So this is a very important point as well. I was going to get to it later, but we'll focus on it now. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos, I think I've mentioned this. I feel like I've mentioned things in different capacities. I think in one of our first classes, I think I spoke to you about the Rambam when he explains the mitzvah, v'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha. We speak about this. The Rambam says, what does it mean to love Hashem? He actually says something right. He says, the way that a man loves a woman is the way that you have to love Hashem. Now, what does that mean? You can't love Hashem as the way human love manifests itself. So the Rambam's example is that the same way that when a man and woman are in love, they constantly think about each other. They're like preoccupied with one another. That's the level of love that a person has to try to cultivate in a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A constant, consistent love of preoccupation. So the Rambam says, how do you come to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So remember, what did the Rambam say? Hilchos Deos. What does he say? So people think, daven, learn. So the Rambam writes. I mean, that's true. The Rambam writes that also. But what's the first thing he says? Look at nature. Look at nature. See the greatness of nature, and that'll give you a glimpse into HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's absolutely no question. You're 100% right. Which is part of Perek Shira, is going to be learning about the greatness of nature, which teaches us about our own greatness, because we are greater than the natural world, as we are going to learn. And through that, we gain a greater appreciation about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Yibam Shalom is greater than the natural world, and he's greater than us, obviously, in infinite, infinite ways. So through the songs of nature, we're going to develop an appreciation of the natural world, and what the natural world does, and how the natural serves HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Through that, the Kal V'Chomer is going to be, through the greatness of nature, we will see how our greatness is even greater. And of course, the next logical step is, after seeing the greatness of our greatness, we begin to see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let's go. So here, Shamayim is using a pasuk from Tehillim. Shamayim Sabim Kavod Kel, Umaseh Yadav Magid Harakia. So let's analyze this. So if you notice again, what's striking about the pasuk that's being used? What's striking? Yes. So first of all, straight from Tehillim, there's really like, there's no, the Shamayim doesn't seem to be adding on anything all that much. Now the truth is, we're going to see that through most of Perek Shira, the different parts of nature, they're not mosif. It's not like they add on their own editorial comment. They take the pasuk, and the pasuk becomes their speech. Good. What else is unique about this pasuk? Or what else is just intriguing?
Like, it's just saying that, like, we say Hashem's glory, we say Hashem's greatness, like, it doesn't actually say what it is.
Great. Doesn't describe what is Hashem's glory, what is Hashem's greatness. Good. What else?
It's a fraction in the Shemayim and the Rakia.
Good. So this is what I want to seize on right now. Excellent. So meaning, it's interesting that the pasuk itself makes two references. One to Shamayim and one to Rakia. Now the truth is, that's actually not a surprise to us because we've seen that already. Where have we seen that? Already in the beginning of Bereishis. Take a look at number two, three. Vayomer Elokim, Yiki Rakia Besoch Hamayim, V'mavdil bein mayim lemayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and says, let there be a rakia. So if I were to ask you to define the word rakia, how would you define it? How would you, and don't say expanse. Right? So how would you define it? So rakia is actually a very difficult word to define. Yes? Could be atmosphere, good. So I'll tell you, I learned the real definition of this from one of my daughters in Beis Yaakov. When she was a little girl, she came home learning this pasuk in Chumash, and her mora gave her such a great, I don't remember who the mora was, but such a great definition. They translated rakia as sky divider. Sky divider. Right? So the truth is, I'm sure you could find probably a better, more succinct English word for it, but it's actually a great descriptive definition. Because the rakia, the job of the rakia, what's the job of the rakia? To divide, right? The job of the rakia, and you can see that's the pasuk. You remember again, what's the backdrop to this? This is only Perek Aleph, Pasuk Vav in the Chumash. So remember again, when the Torah introduces us, what does the world look like at the beginning of creation? Right? The world was Tov Vavo, but what was there? Choshech, but what else was there? Beruach Elokim Rachefes Apnei Hamayim. There's water. There's water everywhere. There's water below, there's water above, there is water everywhere. By the way, this is incredibly important. The notion, I'll just tell you, this is an incredible idea. The notion that the first substance in the world was water. Why is this important? In every single thing in Judaism, whether it's tumah, or whether it's changing states from one state to another, what do you need? Water. Isn't it incredible, right? Mikvah plays an incredible role. See, for us today, mikvah, for our purposes, really, when we think about mikvah, so we have an association to Taras HaMishpacha. But the truth is, mikvah, in a pure sense, is much more beyond Taras HaMishpacha. When there's a Beis HaMikdash, the laws of Tum and Tara were necessary all of the time. So isn't it incredible that if a person is, for some reason, Tameh, whether it's a Tumah because of Nida, or whether it's a Tumah as a variety of different things, in order to change your state, you have to go into water. You have to go into water. You could say Sefer Tehillim 15 times. You could take on a million new Kabbalists. It doesn't make a difference. Your state only changes if you immerse yourself. And by the way, not just a little dip, right? Not just a backstroke. Mamish, you have to be totally enveloped in the water. Not only that, no chatzitzas. And this is by all tevilos. Whenever there is a mandated immersion in the mikvah, no chatzitzos. There can't be anything interposing between my skin and the water. So the image is, I have to be enveloped by water. Why does being enveloped by water change your state in life? And what's the answer? Because water was the primordial building block. Water was the first thing that was here from which the universe was created. So when I want to change my state in life, when I want to go from state A to state B, from Tuma to Tara, or just from this status to that status, I envelop myself in the primordial building blocks of the universe. It's an incredible insight into the notion of Tevila. The reason why water changes the state of the individual is because, again, it is the very matter, the very item from which all life and all creation was made. Well, in order to state it a little bit differently, when you want to recreate yourself or you want to recreate your status, you envelop yourself in the fundamental building block of all universal life. Which is why, by the way, there's even a minhag, meaning even on Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, Shulchan Aruch writes that the minhag is to go to the mikvah. For men, minhag is to go to the mikvah. Why? So what is, meaning why there more than Erev Shabbos? And people do that also, but why is your insistence there on Yomim Noraim? Because what's Yomim Noraim all about? What is it really all about? Recreating yourself. That's really what it's about. Tshuva is one of the ways, or is a primary tool in which we are able to recreate ourselves. But this is very important. The goal of Yamim Noraim is not tshuva. The goal of Yamim Noraim is to recreate myself, to refashion myself, to remake myself. Tshuva is a necessary component in that process. None of that happens without water. That's why, by the way, water comes into play immediately on Rosh Hashanah. We know where. Right? Tashlich. Remember, let's be honest. You're not throwing your averos into the water. Right? You're not throwing... Why? How do I know you're throwing your averos into the water? Because if it was really that easy, then how often would you be doing tashlich? Every day. Right? At least once a day. Mamish, if that's all it takes, as a body of water and emptying out my pockets symbolically and saying a couple of psukim, I'm all over that. That's fantastic. That's easy. Obviously, again, there's a desire to bring us close to water on Yamim Noraim. Because when you look at water, what you see are the very building blocks of creation. What you see are the very building blocks of the universe, the very building blocks of the self. Just like from water was created this magnificent universe, so the reminder is, I have the ability to create and recreate myself as well. So therefore, back to number three. So the Shmaruch who creates a rakia, and the job of the rakia is to divide between my malyonim and my tachtonim. There's upper waters and there's lower waters. And the job of the rakia is to divide that. Okay, pasuk goes on. But number three still, pasuk zayin. Vayasa lokim es harakia. Vayabdel ben hamayim ha-shamitachas harakia o ben hamayim ha-shamayal harakia v'ayichin. So what does the Kaddish Baruch do? He makes the rakia. And again, he divides. Remember again, pasuk vav is the divine expression of intent. Pasuk Zayin is the actual asiyah, the actualization of the divine intent in the Olam HaSiyah, in the world of action. God makes the rakia, and he divides between the mayim itiachas the rakia, ubein hamayim hashem al rakia, vayichein. Vayikra lakim rakia shamayim, vayere vayvok yom sheni. So if I were to ask you now, tell me the relationship between rakia and shamayim, what would you say? What's the relationship? I'm sorry? Good, but what's the relationship between Rakia and Shamayim? So the truth is, the simple answer is, they're the same thing. Right? Shamayim is the formal name that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to it. The descriptive name is Rakia. The descriptive name is Rakia. Then ultimately, again, so it's the same thing. That's why the Pasuk says, Vayikra Lakim Rakia Shamayim. Again, remember, originally it's called Rakia. That's the name, sky divider. That's what it does, it divides. Kadosh Baruch Hu then gives the descriptive name, or I should say, the actual name, the formal name is Shamayim. So, yes?
Okay, I don't know why this never occurred to me ever, but the sky isn't actually made of water.
The sky?
Isn't actually made of water.
The sky is not made of water, correct.
So, how do we understand this?
It's the divider. It's the divider. There are. You're right. This is the whole point. This is exactly the point. The sky itself is not water. The sky is this dividing entity. That there are waters above the Shamayim and there are waters below the Shamayim. But the Shamayim itself is not water.
But there's not actually water above the sky.
How do you know?
Because
we explore
outer space.
We're not talking about outer space. You're talking about by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're talking about the Mayim El Yonim. The Mayim El Yonim, ultimately, again, is not a reference to necessarily our universe. The Mayim El Yonim refer to waters that reside by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whatever that means. And first of all, just even about space, remember, we've explored pieces of space, right? We all recognize that there are parts of the universe that we have not even begun to access yet. So who knows what will be found? They've already found traces of water on different planets. So who knows what will be found in the future? But I think even on a basic level, I think the Mayim Elyonim in this context refers to the Elyonim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the Elyonim by the Kisei HaKavod, that apparently there's water there. What the water is, what the water does, what the water looks like, I don't know. But the sky itself, you are absolutely correct, is not water, it is a divider. Mayim Elyonim, Mayim Tachtonim. So it's just important to note over here, Rakia and Shamayim are not really two different identities. Now remember again, you'll look it up, Rashi already comments, why is it called Shamayim? Eish and Mayim, right? Right, there's a whole, the Rashi gives a couple of different, so we're not going to get into that now, but Shamayim is the formal name, Rakia is a descriptive name, yes? It sounds like it's on top, not in the Shamayim itself. You'd have to ask on Rashi's interpretation of Eish and Mayim them, but according to Pasha Pshat, there's waters above the Shamayim and there's waters below the Shamayim. The waters below the Shamayim, that we know, what does that refer to? Our water, right? Ocean, seas, everything that we have on this earth, on this planet. The Elyonim seem to be some type of celestial waters. Waters that reside somehow with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yes? Oh, I'm sure, just like water was the building block of life, Torah is the building block of life, water sustains, I'm sure it all figures into the metaphor. Absolutely. So let's analyze this a little bit. Take a look at number four. So writes Rashi, B'soch ha-mayim, be'emtza ha-mayim, she'ish hefresh be'mayim al-yorom l'rakia, kimol ha-rakia l'mayim sha'al ha-aretz. Ha-lamarata, she'im tiluyim be'ma'amaro shel melech. So Rashi addresses these Mayim Elyonim a little bit. So Rashi says, what does it mean, B'soch HaMayim? So remember again, if you just, obviously the Pesukim in Bereishis are understood literally, but also recognize that there's a deeper meaning in each of these things. So it literally says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let the Rakia be B'soch HaMayim. B'soch HaMayim means what? In the middle, or in between, in the water, which sounds like the world is this big thing of water, and the Chalish Baruch Hu inserts the Rakia into the middle of the waters. The lower waters drop down. That happens on a later day of creation. The Chalish Baruch Hu gathers the seas into particular places. And the Mayim Elyonim, Rashi says, are Tiluyim b'ma'amaro shel melech, which literally means what? Hanging. Suspended. Suspended by the word of the king. Which again indicates to us that these Mayim Elyonim are some type of celestial waters. They are suspended by the word of the king. So, in general, what's fascinating about the we'll call the Genesis narrative, Maase Bereishis, is that the creation story follows a particular order. If you look at the creation story, so how does it happen? So first, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates something, and when he creates it at first, it's unchecked. It's unchecked. In subsequent creation, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu then go ahead and do? He limits it. He reins it in. Water is a perfect example of that. First, there's water everywhere, right? Then what happens? Step one, water everywhere. What's step? Water everywhere is step one. Step two? Split it. But split into what? Upper waters, lower waters. Step three? Good, is where the waters are gathered into particular places. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu orders the waters not to go onto the Yabasha, right? There's Aretz, Yabasha, and there's Yamim, and there's seas, and each one has their boundaries. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates animals. What happens when animals are created at first? Where do they go? Where do they go? You're from Bereishis. You've seen it before, right? Just very modest, right? Where do the animals go? Take a wild guess. Where do the animals go? Anywhere they want. What happens when HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates man? Animals are reined in. Suddenly, again, at the yira that animals have of human beings doesn't allow them to go anywhere. They're limited to certain parts, to certain spaces, to certain areas. So the story of Maaseh Bereishis, and again, there's a lot of reasons, a lot of messages what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, but it begins first with expansive creation, and then expansive creation is limited more and more and more till it's defined in a more narrow way. So the Sfas Emes in number 5 makes an incredible observation. Sfas Emes is the Ger Rebbe, and he writes as follows. Ki amayim nechleku yihira ki abasoch amayim. So listen to this. So the waters are divided. The waters are divided. So there's now upper waters and lower waters. Now let me ask you, is there any more connection between the upper waters and the lower waters? What does it sound like? Sounds like no. Right? It sounds like no. It sounds like there's the rakia. The rakia, the shamayim, is this divider. The point of a divider is to keep two things separate. So there's the mayim al-yom, the upper waters, and then there's the lower waters. Raisis Hasem is something amazing. After the rakia is made, you're going to see over here is actually quoting the Zohar that says, "Ki amayim nechalku yirakia b'soch amayim, umayim tachtonim bochim." This is incredible. What happens when the waters are split? Mayim tachtonim bochim, which means the lower waters are crying. Why? Anon ba'inon lemehave kadam malka. What are the waters? Lower waters. What are they crying? We want to be closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The lower water saying is a little fair. What's happening over here? Up until now, before the Rakia, all of us are one happy family of water, and we're all before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now suddenly, God, you're introducing the Rakia, and what? There's a divider. And that division separates Mayim Elyonim, Mayim Tachtonim. Mayim Elyonim has the great privilege of being where? By HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kad Mei Malka. Right? Levehave Kad Malka. Before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mayim Tachtonim is relegated to where? The earth. So the lower waters, the earthly waters cry. It is not fair that we are cut off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We also, the wording is so beautiful, Anan ba'inan lemehave kadam malka. We want so badly to be before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Sfas Emes ends off, he says, interestingly enough, so how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So let me ask you, whenever something in the natural world cries out to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Shel Olam never turns away such a request. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do for the Mayim Tachtonim? Bekasu Chazal, Huva Barashi Parshas Vayikra, Ki Nichras Bris LaMayim Tachtonim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu answer the request of the Mayim Tachtonim? So Rashi actually is commenting on a particular pasuk. The pasuk says, Al Kol Karbancha Takriv Melach, which tells you that every single carbon, what do you have to have? Salt. Salt comes from water. That's the biblical salt, right? Was it mined? But rather, again, it was coming from water. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Mayim Tachtonim, don't be upset. Don't be upset. You're not cut off from me. You too will have a portion or have a significant part in serving me. Where? Ki nichras bris l'mayim tachtonim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu affected a covenant with earthly water. What was the covenant he made with earthly water? Lahavi mehem mayim bechag. Mayim bechag refers to what? Nisuch hamayim on Sukkis. Remember again, Sukkis had a very unique carbon. It's called a carbon, although it's not a carbon in the normative sense. Remember, there was nisuch hamayim. They poured water on the Mizbeach. So water is the only liquid like that. Wine has that because you have nisachim that are wine. But wine isn't, wine is a davar chashuv. We understand wine. Water was poured on the Mizbeach on Sukkis. There's nisuch hamayim, umelech al kol karbanos. And ultimately, again, salt on every single carbon. There is no carbon that does not have salt. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the waters, waters, you're upset that you've been cut off, I'm going to give you a nechama. So you're not cut off. You're not cut off. You are going to have the opportunity to be used in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well, two times. Now the truth is not two times, because salt is an indispensable part of any carbon. What is the halacha? If you offer up a carbon and you do not salt it, take a wild guess. It's possible. It's not good. It's not good. You cannot go ahead and offer up a korban without melech. Melech becomes an indispensable part of korbanic service, which means that mayim is an indispensable part of sacrificial service and rites, and nisach hamayim. This gives the mayim tachtonim entry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Question?
I got it.
Okay, so this is incredible, because what we begin to see over here is this fundamental tension that exists. Before the Rakia, everybody's one happy water family, right? Everybody's great. We're all before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's beautiful. Rakia comes along, and suddenly again, there are these sanctified Mayim Elyonim, these waters that are before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then there's seemingly mundane Mayim Tachtonim, earthly waters. Mayim Tachtonim feeling very left out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't worry, don't be upset. I promise that there's going to be a place for you in my service as well. We're going to stop over here for today. I apologize, I'm going to end a little bit early. And in Meretz Hashem, we'll pick up with this theme in Meretz Hashem on Monday.